Happy holidays, friends! Lyle Wiley here, a high school English teacher and speech and debate coach in Thermopolis, Wyoming, and your host of the One Clap Speech and Debate Podcast, your go-to podcast for speech and debate resources, stories, tips, and more. Hopefully everyone is enjoying a safe holiday season thus far. Thermopolis got hit by a wild cold front, and we've been living in 30-degree below zero temperatures, which has been pretty interesting for sure. I've mostly just been hunkering down with the fam and the dog in the house, trying to stay warm, drinking a lot of coffee. Anyway, I wish you all a very warm holiday season. We've been facilitating discussions about seeking equality in speech and debate in season 4 of the podcast, and I'm really way behind on my original schedule, but I still have a great lineup of content coming your way. Hopefully, I can use some of the break to get a little bit caught up. Stick around to the end of the episode to hear more about some of the upcoming content on the show. As for today's show, well, I had the opportunity this summer to talk with Natrona County High School speech and debate legend, Zoe Pickett. Zoe and I did an in-person interview in Casper, and we had a really fun chat. Zoe talked about her geography club in middle school, why she loves Lincoln Douglas debaters, what makes an extemporaneous speech really pop, and why it's important to have conversations about gender bias in the speech and debate community. So let's go ahead and just hop right into my interview with Zoe Pickett. Welcome to the One Clap Speech and Debate Podcast, Zoe Pickett. I'm here in Zoe's house in Casper, Wyoming. Thank you for welcoming me into your home.
Yeah.
Probably a dire mistake, but I'm really glad to be here. It was a lot of fun to set up a studio. And thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We've talked before a couple of times, just at tournaments, but also in a panel discussion earlier this month. So it's been nice to get to know you a little bit more. I know you as an amazing competitor in the state. Seen you on stage for years. But, you know, let's start with some just real basic stuff. On a scale of 1 to 10, an important question.
Okay.
How nerdy do you think that you would say that you are?
Probably like an 8 or a 9. Okay. I can disguise it pretty well. You know, I can be cool sometimes, but if you get me going, I will not stop. Especially in middle school, I did this thing called Geography Club. But I was the only member of it. I'm being dead serious. And I would just go to my science teacher's room at 7:15 every morning, and he would ask me geography questions, and I would just answer them for like 45 minutes before school started. And so
you're going with, did you say like an 8? Because I'm thinking maybe we bring this up
like,
a little bit.
But like, you didn't know that. And so I can disguise it pretty well. You know, talking, I get really excited when I get an extemp question about environmental infrastructure. Mm. I specifically asked for a question about environmental infrastructure during one of my practice rounds before nationals, just because it excites me so much to give speeches on that. So I'm pretty nerdy. I talk about my cases to people who do not do debate. So, but I can be cool too.
Oh, it's not. It's not cool to be nerdy. It's fine. It's totally. Yeah. You can embrace it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I'm proud of it.
But yeah, it does sound like you're fairly high on the scale there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's okay.
8 or 9.
You can proudly say that you're up there on the scale.
Yeah.
So that being said, like, how did you get involved in speech and debate? It sounds like a no-brainer, given some of your other interests. But what brought you into it?
Honestly, I just knew going into when I was in eighth grade, going into high school, like I just want to do it. You know, I heard that NC had a good team. And my sister had gone to NC and she said that she knew some people on the team. They were really nice. And so I just went to the first practice and I was like, you know, let's just do it. Let's just try it out. And the first practice was great. I didn't really feel scared. I felt like even though I wasn't really talking, I fit in and everyone had the same sense of humor as me and everything. So it was literally just like I thought that I would like it and I really did. So it was pretty simple story. Really?
It's pretty cool. Did anyone specifically recruit you or anything? Or was it just so you heard about it and you're like, man, I'm going to check this out?
I just heard about it. I think it said over the announcements where the meeting was. I didn't know the teacher. One guy in debate was in my art class, and that's like it. I didn't even know that he did debate. That's really it. My friend from middle school, actually, I was like, I think I want to do debate. He was like, oh my gosh, I think I do too. And so we would go to little meetings together and meet up and ask each other little freshman questions. And so, yeah, not really. I didn't really know what I was getting into, but worked out well. So,
worked out really well. You've been a really important figure in our community for many years now. And yeah, you did several events. What are some of the events you've competed in?
I started off the first meeting that I went to because first we divided out into different little sections. If you want to do policy, go here. If you want to do humor, go here. So the first meeting I went to was Congress. Absolutely did not do Congress, ever. I did once. I was sacrificial lamb. This district hated it. Couldn't stand it. So Congress. And then I did Big Questions, my first tournament, PF. I did Duo for a hot minute there. Did not go well either. Not a big interper. Extemp is the only event I've been doing all 4 years. And then my sophomore year, that's when I started to do LD. And then that's also when I did Duo for a little bit. And then I've done extemp debate before, and then Congress that one time. So, yeah.
So you've done a lot.
Oh, and oratory.
I was going to say.
Oratory. Yes. I've done oratory the past 2 years as one of my main events, so I don't know why I totally blanked on
that. Yeah, you're good at oratory. Yeah. I was going to point that out, but that's okay. So what would you say is your favorite event?
I got to say extemp. It's the one it's the one I've been doing all 4 years. When I first did it, I was bad at it, but I really liked it. You know, the first couple tournaments, you say for 1.5 minutes and it's a 3-minute speech, but I still really liked it then. And so I think if you like it when you're that bad at it, it's probably got to be one of your favorites. I, like I said, grew affection for LD this year. And I always liked it, but this year especially, I felt like I was really getting into it, really getting the hang of it. And it would get to the point where if someone said their value and I knew a really good attack on it, I'd be like, yes, and, you know, get really excited about that. And so I got to go with extemp, but LD's up there too.
I do want to dig into extemp with you. Let's talk LD for a couple minutes first. Mm-hmm. So what is it that kind of eventually seduced you about LD so much? What'd you like it about it so much?
I really like the fact that you can have an entire debate that isn't really based around the resolution, and instead just based around like the idea of morality, because I just really like having political conversations. My dad was a philosophy professor, and so I like knew who like Nietzsche was when I was like 10. And so just that kind of idea was really, I don't know, I really liked that, and I felt like I could understand that really well. And just having these like abstract philosophical ideas and trying to apply it to real world issues, I think is really cool. And there's really cool ways that you can do that. And so I just really like the concept of it. And I think that LDers overall are very respectful. I think a lot of them like just do LD just because they think it's fun. And of course, everyone does their events because they think it's fun. But I think that LDers just are honestly the coolest. So I think that's why I got into LD this year. I got into the culture of it and just the idea of it. I think the reason why I did well this year in LD was just because I was like so passionate for it. And I liked writing my cases and stuff. I really enjoyed that. So,
yeah. I think you're right. The LD community, though, is filled with some really great people, really fun folks.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, we've been talking about gender bias issues in speech and debate. And I'm sure there's some of that in LD. But it has felt like to me in the LD community that people have been pretty respectful.
Oh, yeah.
In the time that I've been in the Wyoming community in that specific event.
Yeah.
Generally.
I would agree.
Obviously, there's
yeah,
still problems.
There's some exceptions. But, and yeah. There's, you know, like I said in the panel interview, it's subconscious, a lot of it. But I think LDers really do like a good job at going to each other and being really nice and being really respectful. And I'm not as eccentric as your average like interper. So when I see interp kids going up being like, oh my gosh, I love your piece so much. It's so incredible. And they're like besties and they've never even talked about anything other than their pieces. I'm like, whoa, that's a lot. But I think LDers have a really nice way of just being like, oh, you know, like you're an incredible debater and just complimenting each other, but, you know, still being chill and low key like debaters are. So I like that.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have a favorite resolution that you've hit in the last few years?
Dude,
that may be a bad question.
No, I actually think about this all the time. So the district's questions have been incredible, right? So predictive policing, and then this year's if objectivity or advocacy should be prioritized in a democracy and in free press. And I loved those ones so much. I was looking at the possible resolutions before they announced which one it was going to be. And I just prayed every single night that it was going to be that one, because I wanted it so bad. And then it ended up being that one. And it was so exciting. I loved my cases. I loved just thinking about it. Because honestly, another reason why I really LD is just because, like, there really isn't an actual answer to it. You know, like, you're basically debating in a vacuum where none of the stuff that you're saying really actually applies to real life. And so would a democracy really need to prioritize one over the other? Or does it just naturally happen? You know? And that doesn't matter what would actually happen. And if you say that it actually matters, then it's, you know, then you're using a specific type of LD, which can, you know, be kind of debated about itself, whether if it could actually be applied should be a part of the debate or not. So I think that's another reason why I like LD and not really played a factor into this resolution.
Yeah, it's like a playground where you can learn a lot about issues that are real world issues, yeah, but the debate itself is like in a hypothetical world a lot of times.
Very specific conditions.
Yes.
So
yeah, and if you like philosophers, that's a good debate for you to live in.
Right.
It's a lot of fun to bring in all kinds of different philosophy. Yeah. So yeah. Fun. Let's talk about extemporaneous speaking a little bit too. What are some of the biggest challenges for extem speakers?
I know one of my biggest roadblocks, like the beginning of my sophomore year, I had this problem where I would get to semifinals every single time, but I never got to finals. And I think being confident is so much more important than anything you would say in your speech. It's if you sound like you know what you're talking about, then as far as judges are concerned, you do know what you're talking about and you sound super smart. And so that's really important. Ever since I figured that out and figured out that being confident is one of the most important things, it's just skyrocketed. And I feel like that's really the key that a lot of people are missing. And I think a lot of women and girls are missing that, especially, you know, it's easy to go in there and be timid, but it's really important to just break out of your shell and realize the worst that can happen is you get a 7, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that's one of the biggest challenges. I think you're right. You know, in general, extemporaneous speaking skills are not like easy to come by, but comparatively, compared to some of the other events, it's a pretty straightforward skill set that you're building. You know, you need to figure out how you're going to give speeches and patterns and find how to research something really quickly,
yeah,
how to apply that research to your writing. And all those things are a challenge. But I think you're right to hit a baseline of a pretty good, a pretty solid extemporaneous speaker. It's not terribly difficult, but it's really difficult to go from extemporaneous speaker to Zoe Pickett, who breaks at every single tournament. Right? So I think you're right, though. Being confident, too, is like easy to tell people, hard to do.
But it's hard to do. Yeah. And yeah. I think it's just like fake it till you make it, because the rest of the skills that you get in extemp, you can practice and they just come naturally. Like after a while, you get a question, and while you're considering which question to even choose, you already have your AGD and you already have your 3 points just by looking at all three of the questions, giving it a glance, thinking about it for about 10 seconds. All that comes with practice, but confidence really isn't something that you can like practice. It's just something that you have to develop out of like nowhere. And there's really nothing else anyone can say other than just be confident. That'll help you out. While other things have more tips and tricks and you can get into a little more detail, I think that's what makes it so hard.
Yeah, when in our panel discussion, this did come up too, because obviously at Nationals this year, there was a small discrepancy. I don't really, it's hard to even talk about this without, because it's like not a small discrepancy, a very large discrepancy when you look at the international and domestic extemporaneous speakers on.
One girl in all of extemp finals.
Yeah, one girl.
And US.
How many were there, 13 or 14? I can't remember.
But there was...
Or was it 12?
There was six per, 12.
So 12,
yeah. But then in semifinals too, there was only a total of 3 in both events, which is like top 30.
So, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But it does speak to what you're talking about, confidence and about voice, probably. Mm-hmm. We talked about how the folks that were on the final stage were very aggressive, even in their extemporaneous speaking style, about aggression and debate and stuff, but just very assertive, strong. Yeah. Do you think that females are at a disadvantage in extemporaneous speaking too?
I think so. I think that speaking being in the title shows, implies obviously, that your speaking and your presentation is going to be like basically the most important part. You can be totally wrong on your information as long as it's not falsified or anything. You know, you can just have a horrible take. But if you make your judge believe that, if you don't use passive language, you don't say, I believe, you say, this is the way that it is, and you sound super confident, you're going to do well in a round. If your information is so well analyzed and you are just, you know, so intelligent based on what you're saying, but you don't sound sure about it, you probably aren't going to do too well in that round. And so I think that a lot of girls are so used to just in like the real world being interrupted, you know, and so that means you use filler words, filler phrases, like I'm saying, you know, and like, and right now. And so just the fact that we naturally speak like that, and, you know, the up talk thing, like I up talk, And that's a thing that women do more than men, which is not good in extemp. You should not use filler phrases. You should not uptalk. You should not use passive language. Not, you know what I'm saying? You know, you cannot say that in extemp speech, but girls just naturally say it more just because the way that we're brought up. And so I think not only is it harder for women to be more confident in these events, but it's also hard to untrain yourself from the things that you've naturally learned. And I think I personally, like I said, I use uptalk. I use a lot of slang. I curse a little bit. That's just like naturally what I do. And I feel like at a certain point with practice, you learn to be able to switch it on and off. It's honestly kind of like code switching in a way. And I think that's harder for women than it is for men.
Yeah, we're not even really touching on judge bias, which if women did come into the round and spoke the way that we're talking about to be successful, could immediately be a turnoff for some judges because of cultural bias.
Yeah, and it's viewed as unprofessional. And I'm not saying that it is professional, but it's just the way that we talk more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I know this is like difficult stuff to talk about. Don't want to just complain. Definitely not what we're doing, but I think people need to know and we need to talk about these things so that folks are aware of their implicit bias.
Yeah.
And understand how much more difficult it is for ladies to do these events because they have so many more things to try to take into account when they get in front of a judge in these kinds of situations. And clearly we have an issue when at NSDA, 95% of the folks on stage are male.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
But let's go back to skill-based stuff.
Yeah.
So besides being confident, which I mean is important, and we could maybe even think about some ways to try to help people be more confident, mm-hmm. but what are like your key pieces of advice to extemp speakers or extemp speakers perform at their very best?
I think a lot of people think that extemp is one of the hardest events because they think, oh, you just write a complete new speech from scratch every single time and you have to memorize it. That's impossible. But honestly, it's really not that way. I think it's as scripted as a lot of other events and people just don't realize it. People don't realize that there's a format. If you watch people that do consistently well in extemp, you are going to see the exact same thing over and over again. And that's just AGD, background to the issue, scope of the issue, which I think is really important. Not a lot of people have. Why should your judge care about this? I think that's really important. You can't just be like, oh yeah, we're talking about like the war in Ukraine. No, why is it important that we talk about the war in Ukraine? Why is it important that we ask this question? And then saying, so it begs the question, giving your question because of these three points, right? And then in your points, you have specific things outlined that are a little more personalized to each speech. And then at the very end, you wrap it up, you give the scope again, you go back to your AGD. Like it is very formatted. And I think not a lot of people realize that. Not a lot of people who have done a ton of research into extemp realize that it is a specific format. And so honestly, that makes it not that hard to memorize. If it's just like a formula and you're just plugging in different context every time and different topics. And I think that's one thing that once you figure that out, it just becomes so much easier.
For the uninitiated, what's AGD stand for?
It's attention-grabbing device. And so it's the thing that you give at the beginning of your speech that is the zinger. It doesn't go right into it, but if you are giving a speech on the war in Ukraine, you don't just start talking about it. You have something that's relatable or a joke, depending on how serious the issue is. You know, sometimes you really shouldn't be giving a joke as your AGD. Sometimes it is warranted. That's how you grab your judge's attention. And okay, honestly, I have a bone to pick with AGDs. So I noticed at the national stage that pretty much everyone on there was using a canned intro, which they were good canned intros. Don't get me wrong. They were using canned jokes. That's totally fine. Personally, I think it shows a lot more skill if you can come up with a new one every time. And that shows that you're more comfortable with it. Right? You didn't need to just Google a funny joke, before the round started. And then you get your question, oh, awesome, I can just use that joke. You know, I think that using a personalized AGD every time is really good and your judges appreciate it.
Yes. So as a competitor in rounds, I'm sure you have seen the same people use the same can. In extemp, you don't always see the same people competing, right? Because you're not in the round. But if you were, I'm sure you'd see. I know people that use the same introduction.
Right.
Not every speech, but 80% of their speeches.
Yeah. And the thing is, at nationals, finals, it was a canned joke. It wasn't a canned AGD. But two different people used jokes about how Leonardo DiCaprio is a climate activist. And that's really funny because his career started with an iceberg. two different people use that same joke. And I was like, hey, I know that was on Google, you know? And so it's just using a canned AGD, I think sometimes can be warranted. And you're like, oh, this works super well. But it gets dangerous because if it's too not personalized to your speech, then stuff like that can happen. And your judge can be like, it would suck to be the second person to make that joke, you know?
True. Yes. And, you know, at a stage like that, every little tiny advantage you can get is a
right.
big advantage.
Really important. And honestly, absolutely. I think the Wyoming circuit is competitive enough that you get to a finals round at a bigger tournament. It's nitpicky stuff like that ends up deciding anyways.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that any other key pieces of advice you have for XTEM speakers?
Let me think. I think, like I said, just be confident, follow the format for sure. And on our team, whenever I'm teaching people to do XTEM, I teach them with the high standards that I was taught by Lauren. Of course, Lauren had high standards. I have high standards too. Do not ever use a note card. Ever. Honestly, I don't care if you're a novice. Don't use a note card. I didn't use a note card when I was a novice. I think it gets you used to it a lot better. And if you have to look at a notebook and then all of a sudden you don't have that notebook anymore, you have to all of a sudden, basically the event totally changes. That, and also I think using the more evidence, the better. Not so much that it's just evidence after evidence, but you know, I think 3 per point is nice. I didn't even know that wasn't the norm until watching other people do it. And I'm like, huh, why are they only using 2? That's weird. And then I asked Kellick and she was like, oh, no, that is the norm. You just use 3 because Lauren taught you use 3. And I think that's best. I think honestly, if you make some mistakes, that can cover them up because, oh, she said a couple times, but she also used 9 pieces of evidence. That's, you know, she knows what she's talking about. And also doing research outside of the event, but not only just looking at the news, looking at little articles, but understanding why something happens. So for example, when I was preparing for nationals, I wouldn't just look up, you know, how bad is inflation right now? But why is inflation bad right now? You know, why is the supply chain issues happening? Why did we get ourselves into a pandemic? Why did Joe Biden win the election? Like all this stuff of why can be really important in your, I think don't be afraid to use the stuff that you learn in school. I took a Casper College class this year called Issues in Foreign Relations. And that class made my speeches like 9 minutes if my judge wouldn't have stopped me because of just how much background information I had. So I think understanding why things happen, understanding historical context, as well as using evidence to just, you know, give little statistics. Like I think inflation's 9.1% right now. So just stuff like that, just knowing off the top of your head, I think is really helpful because then in your event, in your actual prep time, you don't have to be looking up what is inflation right now. You can just look up, like, you already know the number in your head, you just need a source to cite it, and that makes it a lot faster. So also 15 minutes research, 15 minutes practicing your speech. I think it, you know, you can have a couple minutes different, but I think like once you get to 13, if you can't find another piece of evidence, just don't even keep looking. You probably won't be able to find it. That is time that you need to practice your speech. I think when you go into your round, you should have been able to give your speech at least one time, maybe a couple times before you actually give it in front of your judge. I think that's really important because I see myself in my practice time just blanking out or being like, oh my God, that doesn't make any sense. And then just restarting that same sentence over and over again until I the way that it sounds. And then I just go in there and I do it. And I already know that it's going to work out smoothly because I've practiced it. And so making sure that you have time before you actually go into your round to practice your speech, I think is really important. But that's, I think, the main things.
That's some good stuff. Maybe we should talk a little bit more about preparation too. But before we go there, I like Lauren's rule of threes. I like to teach XTEM all in threes and try to encourage everyone to have, you know, 3 main points or 3 different parts of the speech that they're going to tackle. And then, you know, in their introduction, making sure that they say those 3 things and then their inclusion that they restate them in a different way.
Yeah.
But then just saying 3 pieces of evidence per point is a lot. You're right, but I do think it can cover up for some other issues in your speech if you do have that much evidence. Also, plus, if you're prepared,
And
it's not as hard to get all
right. It's not as hard to get those pieces of evidence, and it means that if you are at 13 minutes, you don't have a 3rd piece of evidence for your final point. That's okay. 2 is the norm, anyways, right? You're still ahead of the game, and so I think that really helps. Another thing that really bothers me, I just remembered this. I think that this is for more, your judge probably won't pick this up unless they've done extemp themselves or they're a coach in extemp, but actually answering the question is something I feel like extempers do not do. I think if you get a question and you say, so first, let's look at the background of this question. Then let's look at the different factors that go into it. And then finally, and then your final point is actually answering the question. No. You should have answered all of that in your first 2 points. You should have summed up in your background, in your introduction. And then this is my answer. And these are the three components that go into why I answered it this way. I think that giving a, like, for example, if you were to get a question about like why Joe Biden won the election, giving, okay, let's look at his past. Let's look at his present. And now let's look at the future. That's not answering the question. The question was, why did he win the election? Here are three reasons why he won the election. You know, I think that's a really good way to get ahead. And a lot of people don't really think about that. But I've gotten that quite a few times on my ballots of like, yeah, like you had great analysis, but I didn't really get a direct answer to the question. And that's something that I see in extempers all the time that have the format down. They seem really confident. It's like your next step is that you have to be sure that you answer the question. And that'll come with practice too.
It's so weird that you say that because it seems so obvious, but I see it a lot. And I think part of the reason why, though, too, is a lack of preparation. And sometimes that's an easier route.
Right.
Because it can be difficult to make a decision about how to answer the question. And so maybe you don't have enough information about that. Then they'll fall back on like background information.
Yeah.
Give more, you know, color to this question. And then I can answer with something. But I think a judge picks up on that pretty quickly, especially if they see someone else in the round who answers the question. So,
and it can be really hard to shorten your intros because, like I said, background is really important. And it's really hard to fit everything in the intro, including the background, especially if there's a lot of background to it, into that time that you should be allotting to the intro. But it's really important that you just answer the question and you spend the 3 points that you have just answering the question. Because odds are, it's a really nuanced question with a lot of possible answers to it. And you should be using those 3 points to, you know, extend on that nuance and be sure that you're giving that really good analysis.
For sure. What are some other things you do to prepare, or a good extemper should do to prepare? Like watch the news? Do you have any like preferences for that sort of thing?
Yeah, you should definitely be watching the news, be keeping up on everything. And like I said, you should also be asking yourself why things happen, be investigating into that. There's these 15-minute NPR podcasts that just go into detail, just enough detail of why things are happening. I listen to that all the time whenever new episodes come out. And not only that, but NPR is a great source. BBC has podcasts. And so just going into different perspectives on issues as well. So not only consuming CNN, also consuming Fox and, you know, The Guardian, BBC, NPR on the same issue can give you a lot of different context because a lot of them just pick and choose what they want. Not that it's, you know, like fake or false, but just that, you know, you can really only extend on so much. And so that gives you a really good scope. And then also, if you are doing extemp, it's easy to throw away your practice time, but you got to be giving practice speeches. You know, you got to. And it may not sound fun. I don't really like giving practice speeches, but you have to. It's the only way. And even if you don't have a tournament for 2 weeks, right, you have a 2-week break, you should be giving a speech at least a couple times during that time because your first speech, that tournament where you've had a 2-week break, is going to be rough. It's going to be bad. You don't realize how easy it is to get out of the swing of things until you've done that. Me, if you asked me to give me an extemp speech right now, it would be so bad. It would be terrible because I haven't given one in like over a month.
That's going to be interesting because the next thing on my list here is I have a question for you.
Okay. I was like, oh my gosh.
No, you're super right. And even the most talented extemporaneous speakers, they carry those skills forward into their life. That's one of the reasons why I love the event. I think it provides super real world skills that are very helpful. But
writing essays, so easy.
Actually doing like a 30-minute prep, giving a dynamite 7-minute speech, you just have, it's like sports or whatever, dancing, you need to be in practice.
You have to, you got to stay in shape. Yeah.
So, absolutely. There's also this thing called the half hour.
Oh, yeah.
Which is at least one episode where there's this one person on there that just really kills it. So,
two, actually.
I was going to say, I think they're in two. Yeah, no, so, and I think that's been pretty helpful. I think they have 36 episodes and then 5 episodes where they just talk about different approaches for separating speaking. It can be pretty helpful as well.
Yeah, and I know that they talk a lot about, on their podcast, about the importance of answering the question and how to do that a little bit in more detail with some examples. So that's a really good source because, you know, they're both great speakers, and then they've also been judging now too, and so they've seen it from different perspectives, and so it's a really good source. Don't be watching it during your prep time though, watch it before.
Yeah, no, the whole premise of trying to use that to prepare for a speech was insane.
Yeah.
but I think anything that you can find, you want to get better, the more knowledge that you have about what's happening in the world, better.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we could talk about with STEM?
Sometimes it can be a little challenging, a little intimidating just to be in there with just your judge, because it's like really the only event where you're only in there with just your judge. But I really think that you can take advantage of that. And, you know, you could make it really personal, make it really personable. Because I think another reason why people don't are afraid of extemp or intimidated by extemp, they never want to try it, even though they're great speakers, is because, you know, like I said before, they just think it's a new speech every time. Little do they know, you know, there's a very strict format that you should be following. I also think it's the only event, or one of the only events, that you can use your own voice in. And because interp events, it's a script, right? Your debate events, you have to be very professional. You're arguing a certain thing that you honestly probably don't even believe, right? And so extemp, you not only get to use your own opinion in it and your own researched perspective, but you also get to make jokes that you would actually make in person, you know, as long as they're like appropriate. You get to use your own voice. And I think a lot of times you can get out of a round, like I can get out of an LD round and I'm so like heated and I'm so mad. And then I can just go to an extemp speech, and instead of being super stressed out, I just use that as my time to relax and just, you know, like just talk with someone about a topic that is interesting that I happen to pull as a question. So I think just understanding that, honestly, the more chill you are, the better. You still need to be confident. You still need to be like, hey, this is what's going on. This is what the answer to this question is, right? But you can use your own voice, and I don't think that you should be afraid of that, because judges can tell when you are too uptight and too like afraid and too rigid. So just being calm also goes into the confidence thing too. You know, using your own voice, you're most confident using your own voice because that's what you do every day.
So one of the reasons why I love the event so much is you get someone who's very winsome and comfortable in their own skin and, you know, lets their personality come out in their speaking. A lot of times those people do really well, but then their ceiling's kind of low until they get the other stuff down, evidence and figuring out how to integrate it into their speech, the structures down, and then they can go over that.
Right.
But then the other folks that are strong on pulling evidence, writing speeches, and maybe a little rigid, sometimes they get over that hump and they end up integrating their personalities.
Oh, yeah.
And they find ways to do that. So I've had experience both ways with students and love to see how it helps people grow.
Yeah. And I remember my sophomore year when that was Lauren's senior year. You know, she was an incredible speaker and she had everything down pat. She was incredible. Like everyone would be like, oh, so you did so well in finals, but like, you know who's going to win. I was like, oh yeah, don't even. But there was a couple times, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 times where I like was placed higher than Lauren was. And I don't think that ever should have happened. But I think honestly, the reason why it did happen was because my personality is just a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit funnier, and I let that shine through. And I think at nationals, her way of speaking probably did better. But I think if you're just going to stay in the Wyoming circuit, you're just competing at a regular tournament, I think that you can have a lot of fun with it. You can be casual about it in a way, and that'll help you out, because clearly helped me out more than it should have. So
funny you should bring up Lauren. Lauren was a leader on your team and a woman. And I want to talk about women in leadership. And I know you've been uniquely in a position that you've been a leader on your team for a couple of years now. You want to tell me about your experience as a woman in a leadership position on your speech and debate team?
Yeah, I think that my team is great and they never did anything that, you know, compromised my authority. <I'm kidding>. No, but I think that being a good captain, being a good leader, just really goes down to what you have to offer for them. And just your job is to be a teacher and to teach them about not only the events and the complexities of the events, but also just about other things. Like, I taught them what HOPE stood for. They didn't know that was an acronym. How, like, scores work for breaks, stuff like that. I explained that in the beginning of the year. And so there's just so much stuff to debate that I think it's the leadership's job to explain all that stuff, because Emma and I were talking about this at the hotel room one day, that there's so much like lingo and everything that when you first go into it, you're like, literally what, like they sound like they're speaking a different language. And so just explaining all that stuff, I think is really important and really sets a good foundation for people on your team, not only for new people, but also just other people. You know, you never know what you don't know. And so it's really important to learn that stuff and pass on information and to be really supportive too, I think is important. But I think the position that I was in with, you know, being on a team that has a lot of female leadership, honestly, not much male leadership, was really good and really important for helping me.
Yes, you also have female leadership at the coaching positions too on your team. Yeah.
I've never had a male coach. I had Miss Horde as my head coach my freshman year, and then Kellick as my assistant coach, and then Beagles as my other assistant coach, and then Talia as the main captain, Talia Bloom, freshman year. And then my sophomore year, I moved to Miss Gray as the head coach, and then Kellick again as the assistant coach. And that was the same for, who was the captain? Was it Emma? My sophomore year?
It was Lauren.
Oh, yes, it was Lauren. It was Lauren. Yeah. Lauren was the coach my sophomore year. And then junior year, again, it was Miss Gray. Kelly is the assistant coach. And then Ian was the captain, which, you know, he's a man, but he's feminine. So I'm kidding. and then this year, Kelly as the head coach, and then Beagles as the assistant coach with me as the debate captain, then Tyler as the IE captain. So a lot of female leadership. So I think that's really great to be on a team. That's just going to happen naturally, you know?
For sure. So we've been having discussions about equality in speech and debate and gender bias and stuff. So we should talk about this a little bit, but why do you think it's important for teams to make sure that women are included in leadership? Because, you know, mm-hmm. the situation you're in is often reversed,
yeah.
especially outside of Wyoming. I know there are plenty of places, especially places that only do debate,
yeah.
where that is flipped to an exaggerated extent.
Oh, yeah.
Probably at the college level.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think it's really important just because I think, honestly, in a lot of ways, everyone can learn from women, but women, not everyone can learn from men in some sense, because I talked about on the panel discussion, it's important to have a girl on the team who explains to you, you know, that there is gender bias in debate, that you should be wearing certain things, that there's more expected of you. And having a male coach, male assistant coach, male captain, there isn't someone in the position to tell you that stuff. And I think that's really important. I think that seeing women in leadership positions can be better just for the school and be better for recruitment. I think if people know, oh, my, you know, female English teacher is the coach and my female friend is the captain, then that kind of makes it a more like welcoming place for women, just knowing, oh yeah, women can do it, they can do well in it, I think is really important for recruitment, just when you know that it's just like a men's thing, that's not very welcoming to everyone. And so I think that having women in positions of leadership really helps that out.
While you were talking, I was just thinking about recruiting. We had talked about recruiting, and I do think that if you want to be inclusive and try to get as many different kinds of people as possible, then you need representative leadership. That's sometimes tricky, depending on the demographic at your school or whatever.
Right.
But we know that there are situations where those decisions are being made, not because of those tricky situations, mm-hmm. because of gender bias. So thank you very much for being a part of that panel discussion mm-hmm. that earlier. I think that was pretty productive. It ended up being like 2 hours long. It was a really cool panel. It was good for me to just sit and listen. But what were some of your big takeaways from that discussion with those other four amazing ladies?
I thought it was really interesting how like none of us had talked about it before, but we all had a lot of the same experiences. There was three people that said that, oh yeah, I noticed that wearing glasses made me do better, so I just started wearing my glasses to tournaments. And so, yeah, just stuff like that. You know, they hadn't talked about it before, but it's like the same experience. And I think that's a reason why it's really important to be open about that and to have discussions about that, because it's important to know that you're not alone in your experiences. So that was honestly one of my main takeaways. I think it's really important that we talk about There's also gender bias in interp events as well as debate events. Most people just talk about debates. I think that's where it's the most obvious. And, you know, I just do platform events and debates. And so that's really all I've experienced it in. But I know for a fact that it happens in interp after seeing, hearing about the experiences that Carly and Danny had. You know, it does happen. And that was, I think, another big takeaway. It was a really good discussion, I think.
For sure. It is scary to me that these kinds of discussions aren't happening. They're happening probably on teams. They're happening among people on teams and in some communities. But
yeah,
it's definitely, we need to have more conversations like this.
Yeah.
Building community like that can help people,
yeah,
I think, you know,
yeah,
deal with some of those issues. Because, you know, it's probably naive to think they're all going to go away just because we're pointing out it's been happening for a long time.
So. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thanks again for being a part of the panel.
It'll yeah.
We have a couple more coming up, so it'll be interesting to see how they add to the discussion. But Zoe Pickett, what's next for you after being a dominant speech and debate force for so many years? Mm-hmm. What are you doing now?
So I am going to college in Massachusetts, in Western Massachusetts. I'm going to Mount Holyoke College. It's a historically women's college, which is really cool. And I am thinking about majoring. You go in undeclared, so I haven't declared anything yet. But I'm thinking about double majoring in international relations and environmental science to go into environmental policy or environmental advocacy, because through debate, I've really learned that I'm a good public speaker and I'm good at persuading people, and I should be doing that as a career probably because, you know, that's where my talents are. That's what I like doing. And so I think going into advocacy would be really useful for my talent. So, and my oratory this year was about environmental advocacy and climate doom and how it's important that, you know, we keep advocating for it. So that's what I'm thinking about doing.
Are you going to pursue any speech and debate there at all, or dance?
I'm not going to dance, I don't think, but I might do debate. I don't know. I was thinking about not doing it, but then after nationals, when we were on the plane, I was like, oh, nope. I was like, now that it's over, I cannot, I don't know what I'm going to do without it. I was just going through my Instagram the other day and going through my Twitter, and I was like, oh my gosh, I talk so much about debate. It's actually embarrassing. And so I don't know if it can just like not be a part of my life anymore. Would they have this thing called the Five College Consortium, which is, so my school itself is really small, liberal arts college, but it shares, you can basically take classes and do extracurriculars at any of the other five schools, which includes Amherst College, which is a really great school, Smith College, and then the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And then also Hampshire College. And a lot of those have debate programs. And so it's honestly pretty cool. I can kind of like pick and choose which one I'd want to do. Yeah, see what events they have, see what their team is like, and then just choose. So I think the first semester, I'm not going to do anything. Just chill, go into it, ease into it, and then maybe do it. See if I can live without it or not.
I understand. We didn't get to talk about dance. I just know you've been involved in it for a really long time. And I was just curious how that plays into your life and the similarities and differences you saw in dance and the speech and debate community.
Yeah, I do a lot of performing arts stuff. I do dance, and then I also do theater and stuff. And there's a lot of crossover between theater and debate. A lot of my friends who do theater also do debate. So there was a bit of butting heads and a lot of busyness when it was the musical and like districts and states, like, ooh, okay, that's hard to navigate, but it happens. But I think dance does a really good job at teaching you discipline, and that's really useful for debate. I think one thing that we talked about a lot on our team this year was how etiquette had gone down ever since we went online for debate. People weren't wearing the things that they normally do. People weren't acting in rounds the way that they normally do. And I think that, you know, dance teaches you it's one way and it's the right way, and there's really no other way to do it, you know? And I think that just using that in debate, if you're going to be dressing professionally, you're going to be acting professionally outside of rounds, you're going to be saying only positive things, because you never know who your next judge is going to be. You never know who your next competitor is going to be. You better be speaking nicely about everyone at tournaments. I think that really goes into it too. Also, honestly, physical endurance too. Like, tournaments can be a lot more physically strenuous than you would expect. Being on a bus for 4 hours and then competing for 8 and then leaving the school when it's 10 p.m., getting 4 hours of sleep, waking up the next day, and then having another 16-hour day just to only get home at 2 a.m. is hard, especially when you realized, oh my gosh, I am 15 minutes late to my round. You have to start sprinting in heels. it's important to know how to dance in character shoes, how to dance in heels when you got to be running in them like that. So that's another underrated thing about debate too. Honestly, it's pretty physically hard as well as mentally hard. So
especially like state and districts.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
They're like bases, of course, but
yeah,
they're basically endurance competitions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you stay mentally sane for it's your sixth speech of the day? Can you still give a sane speech, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a sidebar, but the gal that directed Girl Talk, Lucia Small, I interviewed her, and it took 8 years to make the film.
Oh my gosh.
A really long film to make. Yeah. But she was just like meeting, she followed these four girls or five girls through their high school experience, and it's mm-hmm. pretty cool.
Yeah.
But she, when she heard about what a tournament was like, oh yeah, this yeah. is great, because the kids are all excited about it. But yeah, get up super early in the morning. Go back the night of, go back up the next right. morning. And she's 2 16-hour days. Like,
it's crazy. Right? Yeah.
Especially when we just don't think about it. We just do it.
We've been right.
doing it for a long time.
It's yeah. Just, it's not a question.
But I remember when I first started coaching, I was like, this is insane. Like, there's got to yeah. be a way to do this that doesn't destroy every right. part of myself.
Yeah.
But that is also great.
Too. It's fun. It's the fun of it too. Yeah. Especially when you are doing three events, you know, and like I did three events, but you know, so many people do more. Like interbers on average do like six events. It's insane. And so when you get to finals and it's that Saturday and you've done two prelims and then quarterfinals for your debate, semifinals, and then finals of all of your events, you are so worn out and so tired, and it's a lot. But like I said, when I didn't do LD for like that one tournament, I couldn't stand it. I could not stand just sitting there, because running around everywhere and feeling like you're going crazy, giving, can't even remember what your speech that you gave, you know, the last round was, but you know, it's just the thrill of the game. And the other option is just sitting there for 2 hours and doing nothing, which I think is a lot worse.
Well, I think we're getting to the place where we can start winding down a little bit. But what would you say is the very best part about speech and debate for you? What's been the best part?
Honestly, maybe a little cheesy, but like my team, you know, getting to know my team. I think that debate, like I said, that first meeting that I went to, I realized that debate is like the place for my kind of people, you know? People that you can make jokes about Boris Johnson and they'll understand what you're talking about, you know, stuff like that. And just having the same sense of humor, and they're all, you know, my friends, and like actually my friends. There is, it's not just like a team. I like spending entire weekends with them, especially when it gets to that February, March, where it's every single weekend you see them after school, I'm out of classes with them, and then you spend every single weekend with them. It's like, you get tired of them, but you know, it's still your team and you still love them. And even just people that aren't on your team, but people in the district, I've met really good friends. Josie and Kafis actually drove from Lander to Casper to watch Tyler, Cass, Alexis, and I in Chicago, the musical. And so it's just stuff like that. They're really good friends that I think I'm so excited to keep tabs on them. I know they're all going to do such great things. And then also just people you've never met before and just, you know, bonding over something. When I was watching the PF finals, it was me and Alexis and Camilla all sitting together. And we were like, oh, shoot, we forgot flow paper. Random girl turns. She's sitting right in front of us, goes, oh, I have extra. Do you guys want some? And then just when you're watching the crazy CX and PF and LD finals, and you hear the entire audience go, oh, when she made the joke about Mitch McConnell being our politicians, right? It's like, that's only debate kids that would do that, you know? And so it's just so like awesome being in an environment where you know that you're all the same, and I think that's comforting but also scary, because you know that we're like the future leaders of the world, and so
a lot of maturing is going to happen, don't worry.
Oh yeah. I hope so.
Me too. I always like to give people a chance to just add anything about your experience with the speech and debate community that you'd like to add.
No, like I said, I think it's going to be really fun watching everyone grow into who they're going to become and see how they use debate in their lives. I know I've already used it, and I know I'm going to use it a lot more. So I'm just excited to see that, excited to see everyone that I've made friends with grow into the people that they're going to become, because I think they're all pretty cool.
That's pretty lovely. I do have one more question, and it's very important trying to figure out what the best speech and debate snack is. So for you, tournament, you're on the go, you don't have a lot of extra time. Like, what's your go-to? Or maybe it could be preparation, maybe while you're preparing. What's your go-to speech and debate snack?
being on the Natrona County High School speech and debate team, there is a correct answer to this, and I can't explain why, but it's gummy bears. If you're on the team, if you've been on the team for the past couple years, you know exactly what I'm talking about, but I'm not going to say it on the podcast.
I love gummy bears, so it makes sense to me, but I'm guessing there's more to the story.
There is a story. Yeah. I'll tell you when we're done if you want to.
Thank you so much, Zoe, for sitting down and doing an interview with me. It was super fun.
Yeah.
Learned a lot. Many thanks to Zoe for agreeing to do an interview with One Clap and sharing her story, her experiences, and her ideas with us. Zoe also recorded a couple of short videos that I'm editing to add to our social media and YouTube pages as well. I'll add the full transcript of our discussion on the website, oneclapspeechanddebate.com. Be on the lookout for two more panel discussions with women in the speech and debate community coming up. Included in these discussions are the following panelists: Kinley Whitney, Carly Jo Huff, Petra Van Court, Morgan Russell, Breeze Petty, Lauren Blackwelder, and Sarah Baynard. If you'd like to join the discussion here at One Clap Speech and Debate, shoot me an email at lyawiley@gmail.com or reach out on the One Clap Speech and Debate podcast website or social media that are linked in the show notes. Also, be sure to check out our new YouTube and TikTok channels, which I'm slowly working on. They will also be linked in the show notes. This year, maybe consider supporting One Clap Speech and Debate by checking out our Patreon page linked in the show notes. You can partner with me on this journey for as little as $1 a month and stop patronage at any time. Special thanks to our patrons, Terry, Tina, Brenda, Aaron T., Melissa, Marcus, Laura, Londi, Ashley S., Joel, Matt, Alan, Ashley M., Arone, Izzy, and Rick. Thank you all so much for your support, and thank you for listening to One Clap Speech and Debate. Remember, your voice matters, and we'll catch you next time. Happy holidays from One Clap.